evening. So tonight we continue over here in the first chapter in Shara Yichud Ba'amuna. So the main theme of the idea of this chelek, of this portion in Tanya, is to explain the unity of Hashem, the unity of Hashem according to the Hasidic understanding, according to the teachings of the Holy Baal Shem Tov. And that is that when we say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, that Hashem is one, it means to the exclusion of everything else. That there's nothing else existing but God. God is the only existence. Now, that doesn't mean that there is no world. Which means that even though there is a world and there are myriads of creations, all those creations and all those beings don't challenge and diminish in any way God's unity. Hashem remains the only existence, even though He really did create a world with tons and tons and billions of creatures, spiritual beings and physical beings. That all doesn't matter. It doesn't change the oneness of Hashem in creation. To understand that, how do we get to understand the unity, that the creation doesn't pose a threat to the oneness of Hashem? So he bases on another teaching of the Baal Shem Tov. Teaching of the Baal Shem Tov is that the creation is an ongoing thing. That the 10 utterances that Hashem uttered when He created the world continue to create and recreate the world every second. It wasn't something that Hashem spoke and the world came into existence just many years ago, whenever it was, but that this is something that continues to occur every moment. And if Hashem was to stop creating the world, then the world would revert and go back to the pre-creation state. And the pre-creation state was absolute nothingness. So all of creation would be returning if, chas v'shalom, Hashem would stop creating the world for one moment, then all of creation would go back to nothingness. How nothing? As nothing as it was before God created it in the first place. Ayin ve'efes mamish. And this is derived from a pasuk, where the verse says, "La'olam Hashem dvaracha nitzav b'shemayim," forever, O God, your words are stand in the heavens. So the Baal Shem Tov says, what does it mean that Hashem's words stand in the heavens? It's referring to the words of creation. On the second day of creation, when Hashem said, "Yehi rakia," let there be a firmament in the heavens to create that there should be a heaven. So it's those words that Hashem said that there be a firmament. Those words remain invested and imbued within the heavens to continuously create the heaven. That is that is like the nucleus of the heaven, the soul of the heaven. And as he says, if those words would return back to its source, there wouldn't be any heaven anymore. So the verse, the pasuk, is saying about the heavens. L'odam Hashem dvarach ha'nitzav b'shamayim. But it isn't true. It's not only about the heavens. This is really true about everything in the world. Even when it comes to the earth and all the creations of earth, like trees and animals and plants and the mineral, even the mineral and the inanimate, they too have a continuous presence of a godly energy to bring him into existence, to make him exist. The very beingness. And that's what the Arizal, he brings from the Arizal, that the Arizal says that even earth, stones, things that appear to be utterly lifeless and inanimate, we don't see any animation taking place in them. The Arizal says, nevertheless, there is a soul and a life force within them. What do we mean there is a soul in a rock? How is there a soul in a piece of sand. So the explanation, as he explains it, it means that the There is a soul that makes it exist. Because without the life force, without the input of Hashem, then it doesn't exist. It never existed. The fact that it exists is because there is a godly life force giving its existence. So it's different than a soul elsewhere. Usually when we speak about a soul, we're talking about a soul. There is a body, and this body is energized and animated by the soul. Here we're not talking about an animation, because the thing is lifeless. There's no expression of life in the stone. But when we're speaking about a soul, it means a soul that is making it exist, an energy that's bringing it out from absolute nothingness into existence. Now, just by seeing creation this way, that creation is an ongoing thing, and that Hashem has to continuously create and recreate the world, this itself already points to the utter nothingness and lack of beingness of the creation and everything that's in it. How unsubstantial it is. It doesn't really have an existence. If the creation doesn't even exist even for one moment, in its very existence it needs to come on to an outside force to continuously will it into existence, to continuously speak it into existence, is a sign that it doesn't really have an existence. Can you really say it exists? Can you say the tree exists? The tree doesn't exist. Because without that force saying exist, 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 it doesn't exist on its own. Its existence is the godly life force. That's what's existing. That's what's there. That's what's really substantial. The tree or the stone or the heavens or the earth is finding, is being brought into beingness just for a millisecond until it needs to be regenerated once again. So it doesn't really have, can't say it exists. God exists, his energy exists, and he is giving the creation a chance to be in some kind of beingness. But it's not a real beingness that we should say that the creation exists. This itself, again, so this, we're already getting some insight into this idea of Hashem Echad. Hashem is one, because the creation's existence doesn't in any way challenge or compete with God's existence. Because God exists, because he exists. And the creation also only exists because God exists. And God's existence is expressing itself in the beingness of that which he wills or wants or makes exist every second. Okay. But we said last week that this is not really the ultimate novelty and the ultimate chiddush, the uniqueness of the Baal Shem Tov teaching. This idea that the creation is hinged and contingent on a divine life force that has to continuously make it is something that was known before the Baal Shem Tov. It's already recorded in the Medrash. The Medrash on the verse, La'olam Hashem Devarcha Nitzav HaShemayim, on this very verse that he's speaking about over here in the Tanya, the words that forever Hashem, your words are there in the heavens. The Medrash says, which words are we referring to? That it says, David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Hashem, forever your words, Hashem, are there in the heavens. So the Medrash says, Al Ma HaShemayim Oimdim, what makes the heavens stand? What is the heaven standing on? What's upholding the heaven? Al devarcha, on your word, shamarta, that you said, yihirakia. Which means the Medrash is clearly saying that yihirakia, the words, the utterance that God said, yihirakia, is responsible not only for the creation 5,769 years ago, but right now, what's holding up the heaven, it's the will of Hashem expressed through his words. So when the Baal Shem Tov comes along and the Baal Shem Tov says that the creation, he speaks about the continuity of the creative energy. That's not a new thought of the Baal Shem Tov. It's not an innovation of the Baal Shem Tov, because we knew it before. The Medrash says it. So true, last week we said that the Baal Shem Tov was the one who made this Medrash popular. He spoke about it. He expounded on it when others didn't really pay much attention to it. So most people understood that the creation is something that God, of course, created. He created it once, and then now, once He created it, the creation has already, can go on existing without God standing there continuously saying, be. It can be without. That was one thought. But deeper than that is that the Baal Shem Tov is saying far more than what is explicitly stated in the Medrash. The Medrash says that the creation is supported by the godly words, by Hashem's, by the words that Hashem spoke. Baal Shem Tov says two things that are not that noticeable, you don't find it within the Medrash. The first thing the Baal Shem Tov is emphasizing, which might not sound like a novel idea, but it really is. The Baal Shem Tov emphasizes that the world was created through divine speech. Point number one, the world was created through divine speech. Point number two, the words that God spoke in creation, those very words are enclosed and invested within all the creations. They exist within the parameters of the creation. The words that Hashem said, Yehi Rakia, is the soul of the heaven. It's found within the heaven. It's the neshama. It's its life force. From within, there is a godly utterance that's within every tree, that resides within the tree. It resides within the earth, within every stone, within every blade of grass, within every bird, within every insect. There is a presence of divine energy within it, and that's the source of that creation. And these are two novel ideas. First, this that we mentioned earlier, that Hashem created the world with speech. We can't say the Baal Shem Tov came up. That's when you learn Chumash. That's the first page anybody learns. Bereshis bara Elokim es haShamayim es haAretz. How? Vayomer Elokim yehi or. Hashem said, let there be light. Vayomer Elokim yikavu amayim. Said, let the water gather. Vayomer Elokim tachei aretz desha. You go through the whole work of creation. Every day, there is the utterances, the words that Hashem spoke. If one doesn't notice it from the Chumash, they definitely notice it when they learn Pirkei Avos. The fifth chapter in Pirkei Avos begins with the Mishnah. Basara mamarois nivra ha'olam. With 10 utterances, the world was created. Clearly, the world is created through speech. However, just learning Chumash and just learning the Mishnah, one can argue and one can understand it, that the speech that we're speaking about is not, the relevance is not in the words, in the speech, in the articulation of, in the verbalization of words that Hashem spoke, and the communication of words. The main idea that is emphasized that God created the world in speech is to emphasize that Hashem didn't have to make the world with action. Generally, when we have to create something, when a carpenter makes a table, fashions a bench, a chair, you're building a wall, a fence, whatever it is that you're doing, you have to go ahead and you have to build it. You have to get involved in an action. And the Pasuk is telling us that Hashem, He's so omnipotent and so powerful that He doesn't have to do anything to create the world. All He had to do was speak the world. And then the emphasis is not that He had to speak. The emphasis is that He just wanted it. He wanted a world to exist, and boom, the world came into existence from His will, from His desire. Children, for instance. How does children understand that? And the simplest, we want to know the simplest meaning of something, saying, how does a child, when a teacher teaches, a Rebbe in school teaches the children, then Hashem created the world through speech, and the kid says, wow, I wish I can create through speech. Meaning, I just have to want something, and boom, it's there. If you want from, wanting doesn't help anything. You have to go ahead, and you have to do it. So what the king is what the child admires when he hears this concept that God spoke the world is not, oh, look how powerful the words of God is. He doesn't emphasize, didn't even notice this element. Because the words are irrelevant. The words are only, how do we know what He wants? The words are only expressors, revealers of His will. But the power is His will. He wanted a creation. How do we know what He wanted? Well, He said what He wanted. The speech isn't of significance isn't meaningful over here. It's the will that Hashem wanted the creation to exist. That's the way it would be understood, or it could be understood. Even if we are to take it and say no, again, without the Baal Shem Tov, even if we are to take it a step further and say no, because it would be possible for us to say that there wasn't even speech. Hashem didn't even say. When the Torah says that he spoke allegorically, it means he conveyed his will. The speech was only a revelation of his will, but not that he literally spoke, that there were words that were spoken by Hashem. It's the will as expressed. To the open is the concept of speech, but he didn't really talk. Even if we had to take it and say, no, God, it says he spoke. That means he did speak, and he actually said words, and the words were the transmitters of the energy to the creation. This is how we convey the energy through actually speaking it. We would still think, or possible, that the energy of God's spoken word is the life force that expresses that he wants the creation to exist, and then the creation comes into existence in another space outside of that energy, which would mean that the energy, the speech of God, which is the expression of his will, exists in one dimension, in the godly. It exists within the divine realm. The creation comes about outside, somewhere else. So he said, let there be a creation, and the creations emerged. The creations came about. But it's not that his words themselves came into the creation. The Baal Shem Tov says on both these two things, he says like this. Number one, no. When it says Hashem spoke the world, it means he literally spoke it. And the speech is an integral part of the creation. He actually said words, and those words are responsible for the creation. Secondly, those words were transmitted to each and every creation. He communicated words into every creation to make those creations exist. So the energy is funneled and channeled into the creation. So it's almost like God is communicating with every creation to make it exist. He's imbuing energy within the creation. The ramifications of these two approaches: if God is creating through speech, or God creating through the will, and speech is only an expressor of the will, or if the Hashem is literally creating through speech, the ramifications are huge. First of all, there's a tremendous difference in the manner through which how Hashem created the world. The manner, meaning in which way does the world come into existence? Through Hashem's will or through his speech, that's one. But also in the content of the creations after God created them. What are the creations after Hashem created them? What is every being? If God creates the world through will and through desire, then the content of every creation is a creation. A tree is a tree, and a cloud is a cloud, and a bird is a bird. Every creation is what it is. That's the content of the creation. If God creates the creation through speech, then the content of every creation is godly. We'll see why in a minute. Meaning, what is a bird? A godly projection of flight. What is a cloud? A godly projection, we'll see in a moment, of fluffiness and moisture, or whatever that means. But it's a divine element. It's not a creation. The properties of the creation are attributed not to the creations, but to the divine energy that is creating them. How? What does that mean? What is the understanding of that? So, the thing is like this. When we say that Hashem communicated his words to every creation in order to create them, we started talking about this last week. What it really means is Hashem became up and personal with every creation when he created them. He channeled his infinite, undefinable, simple life force. As the life force is still higher than the creation, it's simple, limitless, endless, has no definitions, has no parameters, has no personality, has no characteristics to limit it, to define it. It's godly, it's infinite, beyond all definition. He channels those energy through a down-like progression, where their energy assumes, let's hear this very carefully, where the energy assumes the personality, the characteristics, the properties, the style, the flavor of the creation that he is creating. He conditions his energy, which means really an extension of himself. He conditions an extension of himself, a ray of himself, to the parameters and the features of every creation. He fits himself into every creation. Basically, he makes himself very small. In order to fit into something, to fit into a pair of pants, or rather to be enveloped or to be enclosed in a pair of pants, you have to fit it. So you have to make yourself. Sometimes you have to lose some pounds to fit into the pants, to fit into the blouse, to fit into the shirt, whatever it is. Because you have to be of its size in order to be able to, which means that God diminished, decreased, and limited himself to create the world. He didn't have to do that. He could have created the world out of his infinite power, out of his limitless power. But then it would be a cold relationship. Then God would remain in his infinite, undefinable heights. The creation would be the creation, and there would be this infinite gap. Hashem can do whatever he wants. And he wants a creation, and because he wants, his will brings in everything. And more than that, he could have desired and wanted a creation as we know it today, with all the multitudes and all the variations and all the details, with so many different creations that everything would be there exactly like there is today. However, he would remain completely above and beyond, withdrawn from the creation. And then, well, you know what that would mean? That would mean that all the creations are getting their existence from exact same life force. The will of Hashem, the undefinable, simple energy of Hashem that remains simple with utter simplicity, but because he is so powerful, he can do whatever he wants, and he can wish for anything to exist, and it exists. But then, can we say there's a different energy that's there for a tree, and a different energy to a butterfly? No. Because the energy is the same. The energy is still the simple, undefined, infinite light of God, or will of Hashem, or power of Hashem. That's it. The Baal Shem Tov is saying no. Every creation has its unique life force. A mosquito has one kind of life, and a bumblebee has got another life, kind of life. Within the bumblebee family, a hornet has one kind of life, and a yellowjack has got another kind of a life. And God fits himself to each creature in particular to create those particular creations. He assumes the characteristics of his creations before he creates them. So the example we gave last week, for instance, is fire and water. Fire and water are two opposite entities. Now we know, according to Kabbalah and according to Chassidus, that fire and water are expressions of chesed and gevurah. Now chesed and gevurah, water is the source of, chesed is the source of water, and gevurah, chesed means kindness, the source of water, and gevurah, which means severity and might, is the source of chesed, which means gevurah, which means severity and might, is a source of fire. Fine. Now, kindness and severity, these are godly attributes. Nevertheless, they are the source of water and the source of fire. Now, if we take a look at water and fire, for instance, let's look at the water and the fire. Let's examine water. What does water have? Water has many features that make water water. One thing about water is that water is fluidy, soft, isn't tough. It's a soft thing. Second thing about water is cool. The natural state of water is that it's cool. You can heat it up, but that's from an outside thing. The natural state of water is cool. So it's cool, it's fluidy, it flows from a high to low, and it's a very light color. Simple, clear, and so forth. And when it flows somewhere, it has the aspect of connection, connecting. It has the, because water creates connectivity. When you pour water into flour, it turns into dough. You turn water into earth, it's sand, it turns it into mud. So it has these elements to it. All these elements, all these features, all these properties of water exist before it exists within the water. It exists first within Hashem's element of chesed. Because chesed has within itself all these elements. Why? Let's start. Chesed, kindness. Kindness is all about love, connectivity. That's why it connects things. So you're going to say, is Hashem, is the chesed from Hashem, is it the water? No. The tangibility of water, the fact that we can touch it and feel it, that's a creation element. That's not an element that's there in Hashem. But the content of the water, the content of what the water means. See, the water, besides it being water, a physical thing that you can see and put it into a cup, that very thing has content. Every aspect of the water says something. So the water is connecting. That's an expression of love. Love bonds and connects many things together. That's what kindness is. Water flows from a high place to a low place. That's what kindness is. Kindness is someone who has, is giving and sharing to someone who doesn't have. Water is fluid, meaning it's not hard and tough. That's what kindness is. Kindness is flexibility, softness. It has the nature of fluidity, of fluidness to it. The moisture, every element of it, it's lacking. It's not. It's light on the eyes. Kindness is light and easy, comforting, refreshing. Then we have fire. What are the features of fire? Features of fire is that it rises upward. It's hot. It's intense. It's red, in that sense. It's dry. It causes separation and breaks things up. When you cook something, what does it do? It loosens it. It causes something that is, one, it takes gold, let's say, you put it through the fire, it breaks it up to its little element, to its pieces. Well, those elements don't begin in this world as fire. They have a spiritual content to it. Gevura, severity, might, judgment, discipline. These elements have all these things. First of all, it's tough. It's hot. It's intense. It rises upward, meaning the idea of being of judging and discipline and severity is not to be accommodating, but quite on the contrary, to draw into yourself, withdraw, move away, the opposite of kindness. It's the dryness of it, which causes separation. That's what discipline does. It sets borders, it sets boundaries, it creates limitations and definitions. So all the elements of fire are really expressions of Gevura. So when Hashem decided to create fire and water, he first assumed within himself the chesed, the element of chesed, which chesed is which is water in a godly state, in a divine state. And then finally, he brought about the water as a creation, sort of existing, that's not him. Meaning to say, an entity of creation. But prior to the entity of creation coming into being, the first is already within Hashem those very features. And the same as with fire. And we understand that the energy that's in water is completely different, drastically different, and diametrically opposed to the energy that's in fire. And the same is true about every single creation. A tulip and a frog and a star and a fish and a cloud and every single thing in the world. Every single element of it first exists within Hashem And that's the meaning of the divine utterance, speech. Speech is he's speaking different letters. He's speaking different words to every creation, to create every creation. When you're speaking, that's really what you're also doing. The real concept of speech is not just expression. Speech is not just expression, to express. Speech is to communicate. So when a person is saying words to someone else, and you're expressing what you feel. But the problem is you're expressing what you feel to someone who can only speak Japanese. And you're speaking English. So you're not really speaking. You're speaking in terms of you're expressing yourself, but you're not communicating. Which means those words are not entering within the space of the recipient. In order to communicate means you have to speak the language that individual speech. It means you have to reach into the space and into the parameters and into the beingness of the recipient of the other one. And that's what it means to be. And that's why you have to speak to everyone according to the language that they understand. And even people who speak the same language, if you're speaking to adults, you're speaking to children, speaking to the people in different wavelengths, different levels of understanding. So you have to bring different examples and different ways of communicating, which means speech is a way where you're personalizing something to the limitations and the boundaries of the one that you're speaking to. And that's what we mean that Hashem, that's what the Baal Shem Tov is saying. God created the world through speech, not through will. The will would mean he remains abstract, he remains outside the creation, and he wants the creation. There is this infinite distance. Hashem Tov says Hashem speaks to creation. He lowers himself down and enters into every individual creation. He enters into every creation, into their own specifics, and he creates them with a life force that is tailored, fit to them, and that every feature and every element and every aspect of the creation first already exists within God, within Hashem himself. Now the question is, now the bottom question would be, based on this, when we look at a creation, what is the creation? We said earlier that the creation has to be recreated every moment. Hashem has to recreate the creations every second. Fine. But for the moment that the creation does exist, let's say Hashem said, "Let there be a cat." Let there be a cat. We said earlier that that cat needs to be spoken every second. Let there be a cat, let there be a cat, let there be a cat. It doesn't stop saying every moment there should be a cat. Fine. But therefore the cat doesn't really have much of existence, because without God saying let there be a cat, the cat wouldn't exist. Yeah. But for that split second that God said let there be a cat, what is the cat? The cat is the cat. True, it won't exist the second before. It won't exist the second after without Hashem saying, but what is the cat? It's a cat. That's what it is. That's until the Baal Shem Tov comes. The Baal Shem Tov is saying, even on that split second, even the split second where you have the cat and the cat comes into existence, even then the cat is not a cat. Because what is the cat? Every aspect of that cat, the furriness of it, the creepiness of it, I don't know, whatever you're going to say about the cat, every content, every element of what makes a cat and not a frog is really a godly expression. Because Hashem has first within himself all those entities, all in the spiritual life force, of that features of it, and then it just reflects into the cat. So it's almost like something like this, when you're looking in the mirror. There's two things when you're looking in the mirror. First of all, the thing, the image in the mirror can't exist unless it's reflecting you. And it's dependent every moment for the person, for the image being projected onto the mirror for it to be reflected back. That's number one. Number two, it's not just that you're reflecting, you're creating an image in the mirror. The mirror is a reflection of you. It's just reflecting what the thing that is being reflected. It doesn't have anything on its own. You know, say the nose is original in the mirror. The mouth is original in the mirror. There's nothing. It has no originality at all. It has nothing that it can claim its own. All it is a reflection of the one that's looking in the mirror. Every creation is exactly that. It's Hashem sort of looking in the mirror and create. There's a reflection. A reflection of him as he is showing himself to every creature. And then it's being reflected as the creation. So then what is the creation? Just just a reflection of God. So it doesn't really have an existence at all. Everything in the world is only God. That's the chiddush, that's the depth of what the Baal Shem Tov is saying. Much more. And now we'll understand something else. Why he brings the Arizal. And the Arizal says that even inanimate objects have a spirit, they have a soul. It doesn't just say it has a life force. It has a nefesh, a soul. Now, I understand that we can say about inanimate objects that they have a life force that's creating them. That makes sense. Because without the life force, they couldn't exist. They would revert to nothingness. In this very space that a rock is here, the rock is sitting right over here. The space of the rock, what was here 5,700 and 70 years ago? There was nothing there. The fact that there is a rock there now, why? Because Hashem said, let there be a rock. So that's the energy. But why do we call that energy a soul? It's not a soul. A soul is what animates something. Isn't that a soul? You can call it a life force. But why do we call it a soul? But based on what we just said, it really is a soul. Because it's not just that everything has energy. It's not just a simple energy that is uniform in all of creation. Every creation, even inanimate objects, have a soul. What does it mean it has? It has a particularized energy that is the nucleus of this creation. That is the inner force of this creation and carries all the definitions and all the properties and all the style and every aspect of the flavor of the creation in itself. That's what we mean. It is the soul of every creation. Because it's like it's real, it's truth. The truth of every creation is that godly life force. Good. Now we're going to continue we're going to continue inside. Based on this, the Rebbe is going to ask now a big question. If this is the case, that creation was an exercise of God's speech, and Hashem had to literally say, let there be every creation. Let there be this and let there be that. So now we come to a wonderful question. That means that the parsha of Bereishis should have been volumes and volumes and volumes and volumes. Why? Because that would mean that God has to speak every single creation. He had to say, let there be a hippopotamus and let there be a monkey. And not just a monkey, but let there be a gorilla and let there be a this kind of monkey and let there be that kind of monkey and let there be, there's so many different kind of monkeys. And when it comes to plants, he would have to speak about every herb. Let there be cilantro and let there be dill. There be mint and let there be whatever else there is. He would have to go through every and speak and say in a very individual way the individual names of every creation. Because as we're saying now, the creations can only exist after the Hashem contracts his words to the creation. He has to speak that particular form of energy to serve as a soul for that creation. That means that you have to have all the names of every creation written in the Torah. You have to say them all if he didn't say them. Now this question wouldn't be a question if we're just learning. See, if someone is learning Sefer Bereishis, we wouldn't have this question. You can ask yourself, someone can say, if you're learning, teaching your kids, that God spoke and the world came into being, and God said 10 things. So your kids will ask you, say, but hold it, I don't see that Hashem said let there be a kangaroo. And I don't see that Hashem said, let there be an oak tree. Or Hashem saying, let there be an individual being. He doesn't say that. So what do you mean God spoke the world? Where are all those sayings? How did he say it? Because as we said earlier, the way we would understand it without the Baal Shem Tov is that the speech is not that important. The main thing is to say that Hashem wanted the world to exist. He willed. He had a desire. The speech was only an expression to express his will. So then he doesn't have to say all the details. It's enough. If Hashem said, I want a heaven. In the heaven he already desired, he intended in his mind all the billions of different types of angels that there are in heaven. Then he said, let to create earth. And on the earth he intended within his mind, let there be gold and let there be silver and let there be copper and let there be bronze. He doesn't have to say everything. Because the speech is not important. The desire is important. And included in that desire were all the details. That's if we learn not like the Baal Shem Tov. But once the Baal Shem Tov comes along and he says, no, God got up and personal and very, 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 very intimate with every creation by speaking its individual words to create the creation. If that's the case, then there needs to be words for every creation. If there are no words, if the name of every creation wasn't mentioned by Hashem, then it can't exist. Because that's how Hashem gave it its life, by speaking it individually. If that's the case, how come in the Torah it doesn't say the names? And he's going to answer, it's there in the Torah. Hashem did speak it all and continues to speak every creation into existence, every little detail of the creation. However, it's encoded in Bereishis. It's not there in a way that we see it, but it's there in Bereishis, but it's there in a hidden way. Now we're going to learn inside. This was all an explanation on what we learned last week to expound on that. Now hopefully we're going to be able to finish the chapter today. We're holding four lines before the end of page 152. Now even though it is not mentioned the name Evan, the name stone is not mentioned in the 10 utterances that is in the Torah. And if so, how does it survive? How does it exist? Nevertheless, Nimshacha Yisla Evan, it is drawn life to the stone, al yedei tzirufim, through combinations, v'chilufei oisiyos, an exchange of letters, hamizgalgalois, that are transposed, bereish lamed aleph sha'arim, and 231 portals, panim v'achar, forward and reverse. K'moshe kasev b'sefer Yetzirah, as stated in Sefer Yetzirah. Saying like this, true, if you're looking in the 10 utterances as it says in Sefer Bereishis, there's only general utterances. Let there be a heaven, let there be an earth, let there be vegetation, let the earth swarm forth life, let the water swarm its kind of life, fish and so forth. Doesn't get into particulars. But what he says is, Hashem did speak the name of every creation, but in order to find those names, we have to exchange letters, which means those names of every creation are put together by taking various different letters in Parshas Bereishis. It can't be letters from anywhere else. It's in the first amount of Psukim of Bereishis where it speaks about God creating the world. But from there we create different words. There are different words that could be created by joining different letters together. Which means, for example, the word Aryeh, which is one of the animals, a lion. Aleph, Reish, Yud, hey. How did the Aleph, Reish, Yud, what do you have, doesn't say it. Well, you take an Aleph from one word, maybe from Bereishis, it has an Aleph. And then you take a Reish from the word Rakia. And then we take the Yud from the word another word in Bereishis. And then we take Hey from the word Deshe, Tachi or Deshe. Put those four together and you get an Aryeh. I'm just giving an example. So taking together different letters, not that we take, that God took. In other words, he said these words originally and then from those letters, you combine different letters by turning all these letters into a puzzle, into a bunch of words. And then you take the letters and you like boggle and you put together words. And Hashem put together words. That's one thing. Then, that's one way of creating words and names. And there's another way of creating words, exchanging the letters. Not combining letters. Combining letters means we're taking letters that exist already, that are there in the 10 utterances, and we're just putting together new words, taking them out of the word that they are, and putting it together with another word. Saying, but then there's an exchange of letters. Exchange of letters means you're, instead of one letter, you're exchanging it for another. Which letter? Letters that come from the same, that are families of letters that have a relationship one to each other. For example, all vowels could be exchanged one for each other. Aleph, Yud, Hey, and Vav, being that they're vowels, could be exchanged. There's a system of changing them because they have a relationship. Or all letters that come from the same utterance, same organs of speech. Letters that come from the lips, letters that are pronounced through the tongue, or letters. There are various groups of letters. They can be exchanged one to the other. That's called chilufei osios, changing of letters. Now, he says that in Sefer Yetzirah, it mentions 231 ways of combining different letters. Meaning groups of letters, there are 231 ways that letters can be combined in a direct order and in a back order. One of the explanations of this is if you take any letter of the alphabet and you put it together with any other letter, the 22 letters. So if you make a combination of an aleph bays, and then an aleph and a gimel, and an aleph and a dalet, and you do it with each letter, each one combining with another letter, you'll come up with 462 combinations, sets, partners, because there's 22 letters times each one times 22. But from the 462, some of them are doubles. Not some of them, all of them are doubles. They're all twice. For example, you're putting aleph together with gimel, when you get the gimel, you're putting gimel with aleph. So it's the same two letters together. So really all you have is half of the 462. The amount that you really have is 231. And that's what it means, 231 in a direct way and in a reverse order. Because each letter, you can have the aleph before the bays, creating the word av, and you could have the bays before the aleph, creating the word bo, come. So it's working in two ways. So from the 462, you get 231. So in Sefer Yetzirah, it explains that there are 231 ways of the way God, we letters are combined. So all the letters of Ma'aseh Bereishis, all the letters of the work of creation, get to put together in different combinations in two ways. Either by just combining different letters one with each other, or by exchanging the letters. Soon we'll see that there's really four ways through which letters can connect and be. You can create that new words can be created. Now, atche mishtalshel, till it will descend through a down-like progression. Me'asarim amareis from the 10 utterances, v'nimshach mehem tziruv shem even, until it will progressively descend the energy. Until it will come about a word, Evan stone. What does he mean by that? He means that how do we get the word stone? Where does the word Evan, which is the Hebrew word for stone, where does it say that in the Torah? It doesn't say that. He says, well, there was a system of exchanging letters. Now, we don't know how many times it was exchanged. It could be one letter was exchanged with another letter. Let's say an aleph was exchanged with a vav, and a bays was exchanged with a mem. Because they both come from, this is vowel letters, and these are lip letters, all coming from the lips, okay? And then you took these two letters and combined them together to form a word. So he says, we don't know how many times they were exchanged, but it could have gone through many different exchanges until we get that aleph, that beis, and that nun that creates the word Evan. So it's impossible to find it. With human eyes, it's impossible because the codes are in so many different ways and we have no idea how many times the aleph might have had to be changed first into a vav and then into a mem and then back into a lamed and then into all different kinds of ways of backwards until you get these combinations. But every single creation that there is in this world has a Hebrew name, and the Hebrew name is the words that is there hidden in the Torah, which God is speaking and continuously speaks to create that creation. For who chiyusoi shel evan, and this is the life of the stone. V'chein b'chava nevroim, and just like it is in stone, it's in all creations. Sheba'olam, that is in the world. Hashemoi shenekra'am ben b'lashen ha'kodesh, the names in which these creations are called in the holy tongue. Hein oisiyas adibur, the way we call them, the way they are named. I mean, of course, a Torah name, I don't know if it applies to modern Hebrew. It definitely doesn't apply to modern Hebrew. It applies to the names that things are called in Torah language, in true Lashon HaKodesh. These are literally the letters which Hashem is speaking this creation into existence, which means as opposed in contrast to all other languages. In English, when you say lion, the letters L-I-O-N, which make up a lion, are literally meaningless. Because the name lion has no intrinsic connection to a lion.
It's just that this is what people, this was the consensus. How are we going to, we have to make a language. So let's all the people who created, or however came up with the language of English and how they brought it about, they all came to the conclusion that lion, this should be called lion. And this should be called an agreement. But there's no connection between these letters. But in the Torah, it's not that way. When someone is something is called an Arye, the energy, the unique energy, the unique combination of godly energy that comes together, that creates this form of creature, called a lion, is an aleph, resh, yud, and a hey. It's like when you're making a lemon cake or a chocolate cake or any kind of a thing or a strawberry shortcake. Everything has its unique ingredients. Here too, every creation has its unique ingredient of energy, and it has to be in that order. First the aleph, then the resh, then the yud, and then the hey. If it would go in a different order, it would be a different kind of creature. It's only in that order that it combines, that it makes up this name. So these are, the name of everything is really the true content of what it is. Hamishtal shalois me madreg la madreg. That these names, or where did these names come from? They came from level to level. Ma'asara ma'amaroi shebet Torah. From the 10 utterances of the Torah, it is derived, these individual names. How do we get to these names? Al yedei chilufim, through exchanges of letters. Utumurois, and substitutions. Tumurais Isis and substitutions of letters, Bereish Lamed Aleph Sha'arim, 231 ways, Achemagias and Mislapshes Ba'isa Nivra, until it arrives and then gets enclosed in that creation, Lach Yosei, to give it life. Now it's interesting, I mentioned before there are two ways through which letters get, in which we create new words. One of them is just taking two letters and creating a new word, or three letters, whatever. Taking the original letters that there are in the Asara Mamarais, taking them out of the word, forming a new word. Another way, he said, is exchanging of letters. What does the exchanging of letters mean? You're taking letters, but the letters are from the same family. Now he adds, which means you're taking new letters. You're getting from a Vav, you're getting a new Hey. This Hey is not found in the Asara Mamarais. It's just being derived from the Vav, because the Vav and the Hey are both vowels. So you can substitute one with the other. Then there's another way. Another one called substitution of letters. Substitution of letters is when you're changing letters with other letters that have no intrinsic connection one to each other. So why are you connecting them? Because they're opposites. For example, the letter Aleph and the letter Tav could be connected one to each other, could be exchanged. Why? Because Aleph is the first letter and Tav is the last letter. A Beis and a Shin can be connected because the Beis is the second letter and Shin is the second from the end, so it can be changed. Gimel and Resh and so forth. Now these letters don't have any intrinsic connection one to each other. The only reason you're connecting is there is some system that allows you to connect, to connect, which means that the relationship of one letter to the letter that it is being substituted for is far less than the relationship of exchanging of letters, where the letters have some connection, some internal connection between the letters themselves. See, the letters that come from the same family have a deeper bond with each other. Which means, what does all that mean? What does that mean? What is the difference if you're just combining letters, or we are exchanging letters, or we're substituting letters? What is the difference? The difference is like this. Let's ask the question, a simple question. Why didn't Hashem say all the creations directly? Why wasn't the book of Bereishis a real big fat book, big medical book, with the name of every creation and everything, every unique creation? It would have been big, fine. But God could have... And the answer is, the letters, when they emanate from Hashem's mouth directly, are so potent and so infinitely powerful that a little creation could not handle that energy. Especially since, according to what we're saying now, that the idea of him speaking means that he's introducing the energy into the creation. If the energy would remain above and beyond the creation and just will the creation into existence, then the energy can be gigantic, could be endless, and the creation could be tiny and infinitesimal small. That's not a problem. But since, as we said before, the whole idea of God communicating the energy through speech means that he was communicating the words, he was breathing life into every creation individually, speaking to it, communicating, that means he couldn't speak because it'll bust the eardrums. It'll be too intense, too strong for that creation to handle. So therefore, the initial letters, the initial utterances, can only serve as the general life force. For example, when Hashem said, let there be heaven, the heavens are huge. The heavens are enormous. They can handle the initial utterance coming from Hashem's mouth. However, the individual beings of heaven, they can't handle that first and initial utterance. So it needs to be a circuit breaker that has to break the energy down. How does the energy get broken down? When the letter that Hashem spoke gets exchanged with another letter, as soon as we're exchanging the letters, we're already diminishing the energy, diminishing the life. Now, depending on how many times it is diminished, how many times it is exchanged, the more the energy is being reduced and reduced and reduced and reduced. Now, it's not only how many times it's exchanged, it's also the manner in which we're bringing together the letters. If we're bringing together the letters just by combining different letters, but the letters are all letters like the first way, where the letters are the same letters that there are in the Torah. It's just grabbing the resh from here and the shin from there and the whatever and putting it together and you're getting a word. Then we understand that that second word that you're creating is not as intense as the initial words, but they're still quite intense because they're still dealing with the very same letter that Hashem uttered. But if you're using a separation where you're pulling a new letter, it's not even there in the 10 utterance. It just is related because it's from the same family. What happened then? This is already significantly more. This has been significantly reduced to a much greater level. If you're not even changing it with a family letter, but you're changing it, it's being changed with a letter, if it's being changed with a letter that is in no relationship, what we call substitution of letters, then the energy has been even to a greater degree. It's less connected to the original energy. And then there's one more way that he's going to mention, that the Eibishter, the Hashem, reduces the energy even more. Where he exchanges one letter for another letter, not through a means of combining letters, not through exchanging letters, not even through substituting letters, but through the numeric value, gematria. Which would mean something like this. If there is a yud in the Asara Mamorais, a yud, then you can put instead of the yud, not a letter that is somehow related to the yud, but you say a yud is 10. If a yud is 10, then you can replace it with a vav and a dalid. Vav and a dalid is also 10. But the vav and the dalid don't have no relationship at all with the yud. The only reason the vav and the dalid are connected to a yud, because they both equal 10. So the numeric value of it is already going so far away from the letter itself, from the content of the letter, from the meaning of the letter. All you're left with is the number of energy that there is in this. That is, because the number means the amount of different forces that there are in this letter. That's it. So you're not dealing with the content of the letter itself. You're dealing just with its number. So there's four ways, really. Taking the same letters, combining new words. Substituting letters with letters that are similar. Substituting letters with letters that are not similar, but still getting letters to substitute letters. And then we go away completely from the letter. We find just the number of it. And then we find letters that will equal that number. Now, there are certain creations that were higher creations, that they can come into existence directly from the 10 utterances. There are certain creations that can come into existence not from the 10 utterances, but from new words that are combined from new letters. There are certain creations that can come through words that are coming, that are made up from substituted letters, and there are creations that are so minute in their energy that they can only come about through gematria's exchange. Now there are certain creations that have to go through all four. First, the letters are changed, combined different words. Then that word is exchanged with letters of the same family. And then those letters themselves are exchanged with substitution letters. And then those letters are reduced down to its number, and other letters that are the same gematria come in their place, and then the energy can come down into the creation. So it has to be downgraded that many times, diminished and diminished and diminished, until it can come into the thing, until it create the particular creation. I just want to read this inside just 1 second so that we don't have to go back to this next week. The reason why the letters have to go through this progress,
l'fi she'ein pratei hanevroim yecholim l'kabel chiyusam ma'asarim amoreis atzman.
because the detailed creations aren't capable to receive their energy from directly from the 10 utterances, Shebetorah, that is in the Torah. Shahachayus hanimshich mehem atzman, because the life force that is derived from them themselves, gadol ma'od, is very, very intense. It's very big. Mibchinas anefraim pratiyim, from the specific creations. The ein koach behem, they don't have the ability, lekabel achayus, to receive this energy, ella, only, al yedei sheyoyred achayus, the energy has to be diminished, umishtal shalom has to progress through a chain-like progression, mimadrega lemadrega p'chusa mimenu, from one level to a lesser level, al yedei chilufim, through exchanges, utumurais, and substitutions, ha'oisiyais of the letters, v'gematriyais, here he's already adding the gematria, and the numeric value, shehen cheshbin ha'oisis, which are the numeric value of the letters, until it's able to contract itself, and to become enclosed, and thereby to bring in this particular creation into existence. And this is its name, that it's called in Lashon HaKodesh, Hukeli, this is a vessel. These letters that it's named in the Hebrew, this is a vessel that's containing this particular condensed energy that is in this words, that derived from the 10 utterances Shebetorah of the Torah. Which they possess the power to create from nothing to something, and to give it life forever, because Hashem and the Torah are one. This last few lines, we're going to elaborate on next week. This is the idea that what the Baal Shem Tov is saying, that really everything in this world is just speech of Hashem. What's really interesting is in Hebrew, there's no word for things. How do you call things in Hebrew? They're called devarim. Devarim means words. Because everything in this world is just Hashem, it's Hashem speaking. That's the world. It's just solidified letters, or to us it looks like it's solidified. But it's just a constant, Hashem is holding a speech, and that's what's creating. And there's a continuous coming about of letters which make up the substance of all the creations. Okay.